I'd like to welcome Mara Weisenberger and Harley Shaw. They are co-authors of the book 1200 Miles by Horse and Burro, J. Stokely Ligon and New Mexico's First Breeding Bird Survey. And they will be tomorrow night, Thursday, the 26th of April at 6 o'clock at Collected Works Bookstore, talking about their book, along with Karen Stockdale, who joins us. She is Vice President and Executive Director of Audubon New Mexico. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So who was J. Stokely Ligon? I'd never heard of this man. Is he a pretty well-known figure among wildlife biologists?
Not at all. I guess I probably should answer that. He was an early wildlife biologist in New Mexico. He was a contemporary of Aldo Leopold and Elliot Barker and some earlier bigger names, or at least better known names. He was a man who worked mainly behind the scenes, very capable as a field man, and lived the early part of his life kind of as a latter-day mountain man, wandering the woods and studying wildlife.
He did surveys of wildlife about a century ago. What were they? Who were they for? Why did he do them?
His first job really was with the United States Biological Survey, which was the predecessor of what we now call the United States Fish and Wildlife Service. And this particular survey that we wrote about, he was hired to essentially range through most of New Mexico and try to determine when and where and how many mainly waterfowl, ducks, geese, swans, and shorebirds were nesting within the state of New Mexico. Although there'd been quite a bit of work done in the West, no one knew really if we had nesting populations of those kind of birds.
And I mean, this is a question that probably sounds crazy to you, wildlife biologist, but what is important about that? Why do we need to know that?
Well, I think you have to put it in the context of the times. West was still being explored, although it was certainly coming into the more modern era. And at that time, knowledge of literally what we had out here and what was here and where it lived and its value, its economic value, for one thing, was really very important to the people in Washington, D.C.
So on this survey, what did J. Stokely Ligon actually find, the first one he did? Basically the one you wrote, especially the one you wrote about in your book.
Mainly what he found was that with the exception probably of the lakes up on the Jicarilla Reservation at the northern end of the state, at that time there weren't a lot of nesting waterfowl in the state. And they mainly moved, they migrated further north.
Had there been more nesting waterfowl at some point? Or in what way was that an important discovery?
My impression is, no, that there weren't, that was the natural condition, that we were at the southern end, kind of in the intermediate range. They would fly further south from here, and then they would go further north and into the northern western states to nest. And we were sort of the intermediate range where they still needed places to land and rest and feed in their migrations, but we weren't necessarily a place that most of these species spent time nesting or raising young.
What was J. Stokely Ligon's trip actually like? It's interesting for us 100 years later to look at what a journey like that was like without any of the amenities or luxuries that we have today.
Well, Ligon was kind of a farm boy or ranch boy that grew up over in western Texas, but he always loved birds. And over a period of time, working on ranches in New Mexico, mainly working on wells and windmills, he developed the skills to move around the countryside using pack animals. He loved to pack burros. He rode a horse, and he made this trip literally with two of his longtime favorite pack burros and a horse. The burros were Smokey and Albert, and the horse was Gila Red. And they made this 1,200-mile loop, if you please, around the state of New Mexico, visiting the sites where there might be nesting birds, nesting waterfowl. And of course, he was documenting other things on the way, but that was the main focus. And right in the middle of the summer, at a time where travel wasn't always easy in the desert country, and he did it fairly comfortably. He lived in the woods. He knew his way around. He had the skills, and he did it well.
Did he have any big adventures on that trip?
Amazingly, no. At least if he did, he didn't write about it. I think the worst thing that happened was his horse kicked him one day.
Yeah.
his leg was sore for 2 or 3 days.
What kind of documentation, besides the survey itself, remains of this trip? Why did you choose to write about it?
Well, I'd always been interested in the man, and this goes back. I'm a retired wildlife biologist and worked with the Arizona Game and Fish Department. One of the species I did research on was the Merriam's wild turkey, and we're talking back in the 1960s when I started working on that species. At that time, there was very little literature on that particular subspecies of wild turkey, and the one person that had actually written a small book on the subspecies was J. Stokely Ligon. So his work literally became my Bible early on in trying to understand more about the Merriam's turkey in the Southwest. And that's kind of what led me to wonder who he was, you know, and how he became interested in the critter.
Mara, when you look at the survey that Ligon did, and then you look at the situation of birds and wildlife today, how are they different?
Well, at that time in 1913, it was done on horseback, as Harley mentioned, and now it's done through aircraft and through vehicles. And there are still some ground counts where people are going out with water birds and doing ground counts. But for the most part, I don't know that any exist still on horseback, much less doing an entire state during the breeding season where you cover 1,200 miles.
What I guess what I meant was, how are the results different? Are there fewer birds today? Do we still have a lot of these species that he was looking at?
Yes, we do. We actually do quite a bit, and there's four different areas in the nation that are called flyways that are managed and surveyed annually, and they keep very close tabs on those and manage them accordingly. If there's too many in the area, they can increase hunt areas, and they can work on breeding habitat and wintering habitat for the particular species.
We're talking to Mara Weisenberger and Harley Shaw about the book 1,200 Miles by Horse and Burro, J. Stokely Ligon and New Mexico's First Breeding Bird Survey. And we're here also with Karen Stockdale from Audubon, New Mexico. Tell us what Audubon is doing. Everybody sort of has images of Audubon and these beautiful bird prints and images. What do you do, and what does Audubon, New Mexico do?
Sure. Audubon, New Mexico, we're part of the National Audubon Society, and our mission is to conserve and restore ecosystems focusing on birds and other wildlife. And so here in New Mexico, we focus on some of the most critical areas. But when we also discovered this book and talking with Harley and Mara, felt like this was a good tie-in to a lot of the volunteer bird counts that Audubon helps to organize. The Christmas bird count is one of the most famous and started in 1900 and occurs over the Christmas holidays in a 3-week period. But coming up here pretty soon is the International Migratory Bird Count, and there are volunteers that go out in every single county across New Mexico and count the birds.
That's why they call it a county.
That's right. And we also, in the beginning of May, we have a fundraiser and a birding competition. That's one of my best days of work every year. It's called Birdathon, and it's a 24-hour competition to see as many different bird species as you can.
Oh, my goodness.
And
so you get to do nocturnal birds and
as well.
Yeah.
That's right. And because we're getting older, we actually do take a break, and we sleep for a little while. Some of the younger folks, they keep going and going. Because it's a fundraiser, we also reach out to people and have them pledge a certain amount per bird species that we see, and our goal is to raise about $20,000 across the state for this event. And so Harley and Mara decided that, you know, they'd love for us to help them promote the book, and Collected Works said, sure, why don't you come down and talk about this fundraiser and some of the upcoming bird count opportunities.
Now, another dumb question, but I mean, how do you count birds? They move around so quickly, and they're in trees where you can't see them, and they avoid you.
They do, and birders use all their senses, so to speak, not just visual sightings, but also a lot of it is birding by ear. So you actually can count birds when you identify them by song.
But how do you know you're not counting the same bird three times?
They track them pretty well. Usually it's small groups of people, and you sort of stand in a spot, and you can scan the landscape and really watch, okay, we've seen these birds, now they've moved over into that area. And it's an approximation. I mean, it's not perfect science, but you get a really good idea, and particularly folks who do this year after year, and we have some experts that are usually the leader of each of these count circles.
Very interesting. Now, are you, Harley and Mara, in your own work dealing with birds? I mean, I know, Harley, you're retired, but have birds been a big part of your job as wildlife biologists?
For my own part, the era I worked in and the agency I worked for, I dealt mainly with either game species or predators. So I worked with the wild turkey, I worked on mule deer, I worked with desert bighorn sheep, and I worked with the wild turkey. So it was very much oriented toward huntable species. That doesn't mean I wasn't interested in the others, but my paycheck came from federal and state funds that essentially were generated by hunters.
What about you, Mara?
I have been working with birds for about 20 years now on the wildlife refuge where I work at, doing either point count surveys or bird banding. So, for example, this week I'm going to be teaching a bird banding techniques lab to students at New Mexico State University and through the public school system, as well as for local colleagues that don't get that opportunity.
So you're at the San Andres National Wildlife Refuge. What is that refuge like? What kind of species do you see there?
Everything that lives in the desert mountains. It's a refuge that covers about the southern third of the San Andres Mountains, so we have everything from scorpions, rattlesnakes, and tarantulas, and small mammals, to then you get into your medium-sized mammals and all of the birds that either are residents here or migrate through. So pick an animal. we'll see it out there.
Yeah. What mammals do you have there?
Larger mammals are bighorn sheep, desert mule deer. We have an occasional black bear, very rare elk that comes through at least the southern portion of the mountain range. We have mountain lions and bobcats and gray fox and coyote. Those are the larger mammals.
Yeah. What is, I mean, it's for most of us who are living in Santa Fe and who don't, we can't even really imagine what your job is like. What do you do every day? What's the job of wildlife biologist?
Oh, I guess it depends on where you work. There's a lot more paperwork, I think, than any of us would like to admit, but the great thing is there never are 2 days in a row where you're doing the same thing. There is no average day or average week, but we have a lot of obligations for reporting, as you would expect. But we do get out in the field either to track bighorn sheep or work on a mule deer project relative to habitat or disease or effects from our prescribed fire program, or we're out working with our fire crew conducting prescribed burns, and we work very closely with our partners on White Sands Missile Range and the Hornet Experimental Range as well. So there's a whole host of things. You could be tracking a bighorn sheep one day and then putting in vegetation transects another day and banding birds yet another day.
There's a funny irony, and I don't know if you want to comment on this, Karen, or either of you, Harley or Mara, but there's a weird irony that I was thinking about while looking at this book, which is that, and it's been going on for over a century, the same society that is so badly exploiting and destroying the natural world is also documenting it in very close detail. It's just weird.
I'll comment on that. And you're right, it seems to be a contradiction and one that any of us in the wildlife field deal with and agonize over literally on a day-to-day basis. I think one of the interesting things from this Ligon book, he did his initial survey and his work in 1913, which was at a very transitional time in New Mexico and probably the rest of the West. It was right after New Mexico had become a state. It was at a time when the ranges, the habitat had been heavily exploited. There'd been very little regulation on the killing of various wild species and probably much of the wildlife, especially the large mammals, were at an all-time low. And so, in one sense, even though we think we now are in a society that's heavily exploiting wildlife, when you look around the country he traveled in 1913, with the exception of a few species, such as the grizzly bear and the wolf, possibly some others that maybe Mara and Karen could chime in on, but on the whole, things are better now in terms of the number of animals we have. And I guess those of us in the building, in the business, are looking around saying, let's hope it continues to get better, and maybe we're not quite sure it's going to. Mara?
Yeah, I'd agree. You know, we do actually have better conditions now for most of the species out there, and if more is your objective, then yes, it is a better situation for sure.
When you look at Ligon's time, when he made this loop, the antelope, the pronghorn was almost gone. The elk had been eliminated from New Mexico. Certainly deer populations were down. Some of the other species were questionable. And now we have pretty good populations of most of those species, and elk are almost out of hand in places. So it's very strange.
Karen?
I also think that the data that's been collected by observers over the past century has really allowed a lot of the biologists and researchers to study the long-term health of a lot of these species and to really understand their populations over time, and that it really can give a picture of what's happening with those populations, what our influences are, and that it can also help set policy. For instance, particularly looking at the Christmas bird count data and comparing that with the USGS data on weather and a lot of the meteorological information, Audubon was able to really document that bird species are, in fact, moving inland and northward, and that this is happening rapidly in the last 40 years. And so this has been one of the things that's getting more studied more now in the Fish and Wildlife Service and some of the other agencies because of the effects of climate change.
Right.
And essentially, we've got the bird and the canary in the coal mine that is helping us to understand what's going on in our natural world, and so we can set policies to respond to that.
It's a scary thing when our natural environment is essentially a coal mine, which
is
basically
scary.
What we're looking at.
It is
well,
an experiment.
It's about time to go. Tell us, Karen, a little bit more about how people can get involved with Audubon New Mexico.
Sure.
And bird counts and all sorts of fun stuff being
Absolutely.
Outdoors.
So across the state, we have four volunteer Audubon chapters. There's one here in the Santa Fe area called the Sangre de Cristo Audubon Society.
And there's that wonderful center up on the top of Upper Canyon Road.
That's right, the Randall Davey Audubon Center. It's open to the public every day.
Don't bring your dogs, as I've found out the hard way.
That's right. It's a wildlife sanctuary, so we ask you to leave your pet at home, as much as we all love pets. But that's one way for people in Santa Fe. They can come up to the center anytime during the daylight hours, and we also do special events, particularly in the spring and summer. The local chapter, they host bird watching tours and events, and they're organizing the local bird counts. The other chapters around the state are also organizing counts in all of New Mexico's 33 counties. And then we have this upcoming event here at Collected Works on April 26th with Mara and Harley. Our website is probably one of the best places for folks to get information, nm.audubon.org, or they can call us anytime, 505-983-4609, and we can help them connect to the activities that they'd like to participate in.
And the book is called 1,200 Miles by Horse and Burro, J. Stokely Ligon, and New Mexico's First Breeding Bird Survey by Wildlife Biologists Harley Shaw and Mara Weisenberger. Thank you all so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe, and we will see you tomorrow night, Thursday, the 26th of April at 6 o'clock at Collected Works Bookstore.
Thank you so much, Mary Charlotte.
Thank you.